Okay, it's about that time. Morning, everybody. My name is Julian Bogar-Smith. I am a program manager on the Exchange, actually information protection team. Was a program manager on the Exchange team since 2001. And I have a quick question for you. How many folks here have been working with Exchange since 2001 or earlier? Anybody? Look at this. Awesome. Okay. It's great to see you guys. You guys have actually been doing this longer than I have. So good for you. Get to talk today about the topic of preservation, deletion, and archiving in Exchange. And one question, another question, quick show of hands. How many folks saw Kamal Janardin's presentation yesterday, the compliance overview that she gave? Okay, a few of you. All right, so for those of you who saw that, she gave a basic overview of compliance overall, including these areas, also including DLP and a couple of other areas of compliance. I'm specifically going to dive a bit more deeply into a few areas, specifically around archiving, giving you the capability to scale, to store all the data you need for both business and legal reasons, and also digging into how you manage the life cycle of that data, making sure that you keep what you need to keep, something we call preservation, also known as hold, and that you can make sure to get rid of the information that you don't need anymore. This is delete, also known as messaging records management. I'm also going to save a few minutes at the end for some Q&A as well. Want to hear whatever questions you guys have. And I also want to get feedback from you then as well. I want to hear what you like about what we're doing. I also want to hear what you don't like. Feel free to be honest with me. I am married. I am trained to handle negative feedback. So you can tell me the truth, and I'm totally cool with it. All righty. Going to start with a quick overview of the vision that we have for compliance. There's really four main pillars that we think about when we approach the area of compliance all up. And the first thing we want to do is make sure we empower the end user. And what this means is really make the day-to-day work experience of the end user the best it can possibly be. And that means two things. One, it means that compliance is something that the end user hardly ever has to see. We don't want end users to spend their entire day dealing with compliance work. We want them to spend their day being the engine that powers your business and not spending that extra time doing legal stuff. It also means that during those hopefully rare times when the information worker actually has to interact with compliance in some way, either be aware of what's happening or take some sort of action, that it's right there as part of their default work stream. So it's there in Outlook, it's there in Outlook web app. So they don't need to context switch. They don't need to do much that's different than what they would normally do. It's just right there. We can really leave the compliance to the compliance officer. And that's where the second pillar, there we go. That's where our second pillar comes in, enabling the compliance officer. We want to make sure we can provide those tools that allow the compliance officer to handle all that functionality so the information worker doesn't have to. And this is a couple things. It's making sure that the tools are simple enough for the compliance officer to use, understandable enough for someone who's not deeply technically trained. But it also means having that ability to segment that functionality out so that the compliance officer can do what they need to do without needing to, or without having the capability to do things they shouldn't. Like your compliance officer should be able to say, perform a legal discovery search or place some data on hold, but they shouldn't be able to do things like dismount your stores, disrupt mail flow, et cetera. And that's one of the things that we have today with our role-based access control. And the other thing we don't want to do is we don't want the compliance officer to have to involve the IT person unnecessarily. Many of you who work on the IT side have probably had situations where you needed to do something for the compliance team or for the legal team. And we want to minimize that, really, by allowing the compliance officer to handle this directly with permission that you give them, if you choose to do that, then they can handle a lot of the compliance functionality without needing to take up your time. They can just get it done. And the last thing we want to be able to do is to do as much as possible in place. We want this functionality to be built into the platform so you don't need to deploy separate tools, don't need add-ins on the client, don't need separate archives, et cetera, to handle all your compliance needs. As much as possible, we want that to be built in, not bolt on, as it said. Now, at the same time, we understand that a lot of you have a lot of varying needs in the compliance area. And given that, the roadmap from us getting to where we are to covering every possible need you have is not a short one. We understand that. So that's why we specifically call out extensibility here. We want to make sure that we have a good story for our partners, some of which are probably in this room, and those that aren't are down at the expo floor, to have that ability to add value and work with us. So when you use the overall Exchange platform, the sum total of us plus what those third parties add gives you the functionality you need. Going to start today, three things I mentioned, archiving, delete, and or archiving, hold, and delete. I'm going to start with the area of archiving. And archiving is really all about making sure you can scale to hold the information you need. Now, another question for you. How many folks have ever had to delete content or, say, move it into a PST to keep yourself below quota? Or know someone who had to do it? All right, just about everybody raised their hand here. And that's a pretty common answer that I see. Imagine if you didn't have to do it. Imagine if you had the capability where you had enough storage in place inexpensively that all your information workers and you, because we're all information workers in here, could keep that data that you need in place. That when you're dealing with email, you could focus on communication, not cleanup. That's really the dream of archiving. And it's really two things. It's both having the ability to scale to hold all that data, and it's having automated mechanisms to clean up what you don't have. And the automated mechanisms to clean things up are going to come a little bit later in the talk. I'm going to start focusing on the scalability, making sure you can keep all that data that you need. And the nice thing about it, number one, is you don't have to spend time dealing with your quota. But that's not the only thing. You also have the ability to access your data from all clients if you leave it in place on the server. Today, if you have a PST, it sits on one machine, maybe a laptop or a desktop. But if you're not using that laptop or that desktop at that moment, you don't have that data. So by keeping all your data on the server, you have that capability to view it anywhere. Any Outlook client you have installed, any Outlook web app client you're using from anywhere, all your mail is available to you. So you really don't have to worry about, oh, where did I put that mail, et cetera. And you don't have to worry about losing it. Keeping things on the server, they're backed up if you're using backups, or if you have a backupless environment with multiple redundant copies, you have it backed up that way. But you don't have to worry about someone dropping their laptop, the hard drive stops spinning, and all of a sudden they lost several years of mail, because that information is all sitting on the server where you need it. And since it's there on the server, it also simplifies your compliance story. Compliance is definitely easier if you have to search one place instead of a bunch. I actually heard a story not too long ago. This was a CEO of a fairly large company was involved in a legal action. And they had to fly attorneys to vacation homes on three different continents to pull PSTs off this guy's hard drives, wherever they lived, and ended up costing over $1 million just for this one person. And that's the kind of thing that we want to avoid. We want to make it a lot simpler so you don't need to be hunting in a lot of different places for your data. We can minimize the number of places where you need to go to both enforce compliance, perform discovery, et cetera, and just make it a lot simpler for those things you need to do. So I want to start really quick walking you through an overview of what the experience is for archiving, and then I'm going to show you guys a demo of it. Generally, how many folks have seen the archive experience before in here? Okay, gotcha. Looks like about half the folks raised their hands. The archive experience is a whole lot like having a PST. If you've ever seen a PST before in Outlook, you'll note that the mailbox is up at the top. You can see right up there. And right below it, there's another node that has the, notice when I turn my head, it doesn't sound right, so I have to turn my whole body when I do this. You'll notice right below that, there's a separate node listing the archive. And it looks like a PST, smells like a PST, but it's really on the server. It acts just like your regular mailbox. You can drag and drop to it. You can place folders in it, et cetera. You can put data into it, take data out. All the other functionality, conversations, flags, categories also work as well. So it's a really simple, streamlined experience for the users, available right in the Outlook client, also available in the Outlook web app client. And since it's really similar to the traditional Outlook experience, you don't have to spend a lot of time retraining your users to say, hey, this is what this experience looks like, this is what you have to do, because it's very similar to what the core Outlook mailbox experience looks like. Another thing you can also do is search. One thing that I've noticed more and more for myself, and I get a lot of feedback about this, is the more data you have, the harder it gets to find the stuff you actually need. And I've been getting this feedback for years. Once mailboxes started going from megabytes to gigabytes in size, you really have to start thinking about, what is the important information I need to find and how do I do it? And one key piece of feedback that we took is we want to make that experience really simple, really easy to find that data I need. And so because of that, we made sure that when we built the archive experience, that we spent time having one unified search across the archive, both the primary mailbox and the archive. Because I don't know about you, but I have data in my primary mailbox and my archive, and I really don't remember what I put where, or I don't remember what, say, an automated policy may have put where. So having one common search lets me do that. And all I have to do one search in the box up top, and I can search my primary and my archive, and I get one single list of results. Doesn't really matter which location they're in, primary or archive. I can see both those sets of results. And I also get the full fidelity when I'm doing those searches. So if a mail's in my archive, I will get the tags. I get the conversation experience. I get all those other pieces, things that in some third-party tools I don't get, which is great both from an information worker perspective, because I like my tags, I like my categories, I like my folders, and I like my traditional search experience. So that's useful for me. But as a compliance officer, it's also really helpful, because there's no changes that are happening to these messages as I move them from one place to another. My flags are still there, tags, categories, all that stuff. So I don't have a different view experience, and I don't have any metadata that may get lost or may not be there, or just may be presented to me in a different way in this different experience. It's really very straightforward. Alrighty, so I'd like to start now giving you guys a quick demo of how it works. Alrighty, there we go. This is the Exchange Admin Center, which many of you have probably seen. Now, this particular demo I'm doing from Office 365. This is live code in the live tenant, but everything I'm going to show you today is available on premises as well. I'll mention that. And I'll also mention everything I'm going to show you today is also manageable via PowerShell as well. And I'll touch on that a little bit, but if you really want to dig into the PowerShell stuff, I'll have some time after for Q&A. We can talk about that a little more. But I'm going to start just showing you the archive deployment experience. I'm going to start with my friend David Longmire here, and I'm going to enable the archive for him. Go ahead. I click on his mailbox. I click on enable. I say, yes, I want to do that. And what's going to happen? ECP is going to call the commandlet under the covers, enable mailbox-archive, which is going to give David an archive mailbox on the server. The archive mailbox is a separate mailbox. It's going to provision that for him. It's going to attach that to his local Active Directory user account, and relatively soon he'll have it. And it's going to take a couple seconds because the network's a little slow, but the thing you'll notice as soon as this completes is that once that archive is provisioned, that's really all I have to do. There's no other steps I have to take beyond those couple of clicks to make that archive appear. I just do it, and it's done. And there it is, right there. And I'll go ahead and I'll refresh the page a little bit before it does it. There we go. And I can see he now has an archive available. And I can see his archive is right here. And I can go ahead and view those details. And that's it. That is the entire sum total of what I needed to do to deploy my archive. For those of you who may have deployed a third-party product, it probably took a little longer than that to get such a thing set up, but for the in-place archive, the infrastructure in Exchange is already there, so I just go ahead and enable it. And you'll see here, there's a couple of properties I have for my archive. Default quota here is 100 gigs, and there's a couple pieces of information like the name and what the usage is, which is empty because I just created it. But really, that is the only thing I need to manage for my archive. And this is really nice because we did a lot of work to integrate the management experience of the primary mailbox in the archive. We didn't want you to have to spend a lot of time, once you set up your regular mailbox, setting up your archive and re-entering a lot of the settings you already had. In most cases, you already have user accounts. You already have email addresses. You already have display names. So we set up the archive to just inherit from those so that not only do you not have to set them up again, but you can manage them in one place. So if I want to change David's email address here, I just do it once on his user object, and that's it. I don't have to go and change something else on the archive because it just inherits it from him. It's just some extra space. So with that said, I'd like to show you what the user experience for the archive is. I'm going to switch over to Outlook here. This is Outlook 2013. And one thing I will mention in the spirit of full disclosure, it does take a couple minutes for the archive to actually show up. So I enabled it for this guy right here, Alex Darrow. And I'm going to show his mailbox. I also wanted to put some data in it to show you that up front. But this is a live mailbox also connected to my Office 365 tenant. And there's a few mails right here in his mailbox. And you can see he has some emails concerning some finance reports and a nice pretty graph. This is important to him because Alex, in this example, happens to be on my finance team. So he looks at this item and says, yep, this is something that's important to me. This is something I'm going to want to keep. So he's going to take that and he's going to drag and drop it to the archive. And he's going to put it in that archive folder. Once there, same drag and drop experience, same viewing experience he has as well, and there's the item. Relatively simple, straightforward. If it had any tags or flags or anything else, it would be kept. If it was marked as unread or not, that information is preserved as well. And so he has the same browsing and viewing experience. He can create his own folders in the archive to suit his needs. He can really do anything he could with his regular mailbox. But the day may come where David says, I need to go ahead and search for some of this information. I need to find it. And those of you who are paying attention probably noticed there's an email related to finance here, and there's the one I just moved to his archive. So I'm going to go ahead and show you how I can search both of those. Like that. I choose to search all mailboxes in this case. Choose finance. Run my search, and I can see both those items are there. There's really no differentiation in the user experience that one's in the primary mailbox and one's in the archive, because I really don't need one. It's really simple and straightforward. Ah, yes, and one other thing that I wanted to make sure I mentioned, actually two things real quick, is you probably noticed I didn't spend a lot of time reconfiguring my client, and I don't have to. The step that I took to click Enable Archive in the Exchange Admin Center also did all the work I need on the client side. How many folks in here are familiar with AutoDiscover or have heard of it before? Okay, a whole lot of you. For those of you who might not have raised your hands, AutoDiscover is a feature in Exchange and Outlook Web App that allows the client to automatically find where your mailbox lives and where it is on your Exchange server. All you need to do is use it. You type in your email address, you type in your password, Outlook does the rest for you. So saves you a lot of time and saves the users from needing to do things like remember what your mailbox server name is, which is hard to do. Even I don't remember what mine is. So that functionality, AutoDiscover, was extended to handle the archive. So what that means is when I go and deploy the archive in the Exchange Admin Center, it's going to be automatically connected to the user account. When Outlook does another check to see are there any new mailboxes available, it's going to automatically pop up. So I don't need to go change my Outlook profile. I don't need to make changes to, say, Outlook Web App or any custom settings particular to this user. That mailbox is just going to appear in their experience. So real time saver versus, say, installing an add-in or doing something else to manually update that profile. Gotcha. And the other thing I want to mention is, from a PowerShell perspective, the management of the archive mailbox is really very similar to what you need to do for the regular mailbox. I'm going to go ahead and give you an example command, like get mailbox statistics. This is a common command to tell you how many items are in a mailbox, how big it is, whether it's over quota, et cetera. And you can see David has 6 items in his primary mailbox, and his storage limit status is blank. It would say over quota or something similar to that if he was over quota. But in this case, if I want to get the same information for the archive, I just add dash archive after it, and it's going to run that same command for his in-place archive, which you can see right here, and give me the information for that. And this is the common management paradigm for those of you who are fans of PowerShell for other archive functionality too. If you want to change the quote on the archive, set mailbox dash archive. You want to enable an archive mailbox, enable mailbox dash archive. So it's really the same types of commands you used before. You just put that dash archive parameter after it, and it's going to enable the archive for you. So a quick dive into how this works. I mentioned already that the archive mailbox is a second mailbox that's associated with the Active Directory user account you already have. And this mailbox sits in online mode, not cache mode, and there are a couple reasons for that. The main one is that archives can get pretty big. You can have tens of gigabytes up to 100 gigabytes of data in your archive. And many of our customers have said, yeah, I don't really want 100 gigabytes being downloaded to every person's laptop, because that really isn't information that they access as much. It's not really a great use of space. So by default, it's not available offline. But if the user does want to keep that data offline, they can do that. They just have to take it, drag that information from the archive back to the primary, then it sits in the client cache, and the user can see it, take it offline that way. So then once it's in that regular mailbox, any Outlook client they have will automatically put it in that cache so they can take it offline. What else do I have? Ah, yes. Mentioned that the management experience is the same, use the same tools. I just showed you a couple of those. And other management concepts are the same as well. If you need to move a mailbox from one server to another, you move the primary mailbox along with the archive. There's a separate checkbox that says where you want them, that says, hey, I want to move them together or I don't want to move them together. You have the option to have the primary and archive move together or separately. You can also move them to different places if you want to. If you want to have them both on the same database or the same server, you can do that. If you want to have one server with all your primary mailboxes there and your archives separately, you can do that as well. It's really up to you, and the end user isn't going to know which server their archive lives on. Outlook just handles all that under the covers, and Outlook Web App does the same. One thing I do want to mention in terms of where the archive lives, there are several different ways that you can deploy this. How many folks in here are pure on-premises environments? Okay, most of you. All right. How many folks have at least some mailboxes in Office 365? All right, smaller set of you. Both of you groups have the ability to use the archive if you'd like to. If you're pure on-premises, you can use it. If you're pure Office 365, you can use it. Or if you're what's called hybrid, any of you who have mailboxes both on-premises and in Office 365, you can deploy the primary and archive there as well. And for those who are pure on-premises but may want to get a taste of the archive, say you just want to try it out, or perhaps you want to have yourself still managing your primary mailboxes, but Microsoft managing your archive space for you, you can do that too. And this is what's called the Exchange Online Archive, where primary is on-prem, archive lives in the cloud, user still doesn't know the difference, the experience is still the same in Outlook, it's still the same in Outlook Web App, works just the same, but those mailboxes are in those both places if that's the split that you want to do. So one other thing I do want to mention is when people think about archiving for Exchange, they typically think about mail and mail-related stuff. This is calendar items, this is tasks, this is contacts, notes, etc. But one piece of feedback that we got a lot when we were building both the archive and the legal hold story is people said, people communicate a lot via email, but they also communicate using instant messages. And we really need a way to archive those as well, because we have, say, business needs that require us to keep those, or legal needs where we need to keep that kind of communication too. Maybe we want to perform legal searches of it later on. So can you give us a way to do that? And we had one in the past. Many of you who have run Link before may be aware that if you're running Link on your desktop, you have an option in Link that will automatically create a folder called Conversation History in your mailbox, put a list of all your instant messages or all your instant message conversations in there, put them in the mailbox, and it'll let you keep them that way. It's a nice system, really good for the information worker, because now I can search through my IMs. I have a list of my, or history of my IMs if I ever need to go through them. The challenge, though, from a compliance perspective is it really isn't something that's bulletproof. It only runs on the client if the user chooses, say, not to run Link, or they're not running it on the client, or they just uncheck the box that says, put this information in my mailbox, you're not going to get it anymore. And so to really meet legal requirements, we understood we needed to do something that was a little more foolproof. So in Wave 2013 of both Exchange and Link, we built that functionality in. The idea here is that instead of having data being round-tripped through the client, it goes directly from server to server, and I'll show you how that works. So today, there's really two settings that you have to put in place if you want to enable something like this. On the Exchange, or excuse me, Link 2013 side, you check a box. There's actually a couple check boxes in Link that say allow archiving of Link data to Exchange. And then on the Exchange side, you simply place a mailbox on hold. And I'll show you guys how to place mailboxes on hold in just a minute. But I'll explain the theory of what happens right now. Once both those two settings are in place, Exchange, as soon as the hold is placed, is going to inform Link this mailbox is now on hold. And once Link is aware of that and it sees that its setting is also enabled to start pushing that data into the mailbox, it's going to start archiving those Link conversations. This is both instant messages, this is meeting transcripts, etc. It'll put it in that archive in a hidden folder that the user doesn't see and doesn't count against his or her quota. But you can make sure it's kept. And if you put that on hold, you can meet your legal requirements that way. Yeah. Hold is a per-user setting, yes. Yes, it is a per-user setting. Sorry, the question, let me repeat it for those in the back. Is archiving a per-user setting? The answer is yes.
So I have to, if I want to archive everybody's
communications, I have to put them on the hold. Yes. Yep, that's right. And using PowerShell, there is a way to script it, so you can put everybody on hold relatively quickly. We also have the notion of in-place hold, which allows you to set a whole bunch of people on hold using a distribution list, and I'll show that in just a minute. But yeah, we also have bulk ways to manage hold, and a couple more that are coming in the relatively near future to make it even simpler. Yeah, go ahead. I have to double-check on that one for you. I'd have to double-check with my Link person to make sure the archiving works. Particularly in that scenario. Let me follow up with you on that one. I believe it does, but I just want to check to be sure. Yeah, go ahead.
So are you saying that the litigation hold, if you put it on the Exchange side, you put it in the litigation hold, it will go tell Link, and Link will put start archiving all their information in the mailbox?
Yes, it will.
Is there a way to stop it?
Yes, there is. So specifically, on the Link side, you have to go and enable that archiving. So you have to go turn the Link archiving feature on. And if you don't turn that on and just put the user on hold on the Exchange side, then that archiving of Link data is not going to take place. So it's up to you if you want to have that when you turn Exchange hold on, also put the Link data in the archive.
So this is different from the conversation history in the Link, right?
Yes. It's different because in this case, it's server-to-server communication. The conversation history was the Link client on your desktop, putting it in a folder via Outlook. And the challenge with that from a legal perspective is if you turn Link off or the user just unchecks the box that says put things in my conversation history folder, I'm not going to be able to keep that information. It's not going to be kept anymore. And your end user can really turn that process off. If you want to have something that's more defensible from a legal perspective, this actually allows you to configure it on the server side so it happens automatically and the user can't turn it off.
Actually, what I know is that when you deploy the Link, it gives you the option of enabling archiving either on Exchange or SQL.
True.
So, you know, if you have chosen the SQL, then perhaps the litigation hold w- would not work in that scenario.
So yeah, so the question or the mention here is that Link offers archiving to both Exchange and SQL. That's absolutely true. And so if you choose to archive completely outside of Exchange using Link's existing archive to SQL functionality, you can do that, and that's completely separate from this. Yep. Alrighty. I think I covered them. I will move on really quickly to preserve and hold, which I was just talking about. Now, one thing that that we recognized when we were building the archive is we understand that it's important to allow scalability to make sure you can hold all the data that you need to hold. But that's not enough. There are cases where you need to make sure that certain information is actually kept, that the user can't delete it, really that no one can delete it. Or that if someone tries to edit it, that we'll capture that operation so that we don't have important information being removed. And that's really what preservation does, also known as hold. And for those of you who've been in Exchange for a while, which I think many of you have when you raised your hands earlier, you'll probably recognize there have been a couple different incarnations of hold. And I want to walk you through really quickly what these different versions of it have been, just to give you an idea of how this feature has evolved. We started in Exchange 2010 with a feature called litigation hold. This is relatively straightforward. I log on. I check a checkbox for a given mailbox. It says, put this on hold. There's a couple other pieces of information I can set, which I'll show you in a minute. But once I set that, any deletions or edits are captured for that mailbox. And so all that information is being held for me, and it's being held indefinitely. It's going to be there as long as I have that hold in place, useful for a legal matter, things like that. One piece of feedback we got from folks who use that is, hey, that's really useful information, helps us, or useful feature, helps us meet our legal requirements, but we don't need to keep all our information forever. We have a requirement, say, to keep certain, people's email for 3 years or 7 years, or really whatever that is to meet our legal requirements. So that's where the time-based hold functionality came in. And this is really the same litigation hold functionality I mentioned just a minute ago, but with an end date. So you can say, capture all these deletes, capture all these edits for the set of users that I choose, but put an end date on it. So 1 year, 2 years, however many days it is, et cetera. So this is also commonly referred to as a rolling hold. The idea here being that you won't keep all this data forever. And if you choose to pair this with a delete policy, which I'll show in just a couple minutes, you can have at the end of that time period, that data gets removed. So it is no longer in your environment if you don't need it anymore. As we further evolved, another piece of key feedback that we got from a number of customers is they said, this is really useful, but in addition to the time frame, I also want to be a little bit more specific as to what I keep on hold. That there's a lot of risk associated with keeping large amounts of information that I may not necessarily need. If I put a whole mailbox on hold that's several gigabytes, let's say hypothetically I have a certain legal matter, and I put all the data on hold for this mailbox, 10 gigabytes, 20 gigabytes, whatever that mailbox size is, all that information is kept. But there's really a lot of information that may not be pertinent to that particular legal matter. And so the risk of over-preservation, as it's sometimes called, is now I have a good-sized chunk of data that's not relevant to this matter, but I'm keeping it anyway. It's not subject to the normal delete policies I have in my environment. And it's also a lot more expensive for my legal team. If they ever need to do legal discovery and search through this data for that legal matter, there's this big extra chunk of data. And I've been told that many law firms will charge by the gig when you hand them off data. So why hand them off a whole bunch of data that you really don't need to? So that's where the in-place hold feature came, which is the same underlying functionality of hold. We capture those edits, we capture those deletions, but we pair them with a search query. So you can find certain items that have, say, certain keywords, certain date ranges, certain item types, say, I only want email, don't want calendar items, et cetera. And the idea here is to really let you turn that hold from a broadsword into a scalpel. So you can be really specific as to what type of information you're keeping and not over-preserve things that you don't need. And I'm going to show you guys both of these in a demo. All right, there we go. I'm going to go back to David Longmire's mailbox. And I'm going to show you how I can place a date. I'm going to start with the litigation hold feature that I mentioned first. I go to mailbox features in EAC and I enable litigation hold. And that's really the only checkbox that I need to check. I also have a couple options here. I can put a note in the hold, and I can associate a URL with it. So in this case, I'm going to put this note in Outlook. It says, you're on hold for this stock sale investigation. Please don't delete any relevant information. And I'm going to put in a URL. Legal team. And the idea here is that both of these pieces of information are going to be made available to that user in Outlook. And this is a common request that I've got, where many folks have told me, yes, we need to put users on hold. Yes, we want technology to manage as much of that as possible. But it's not quite that simple. I need you to let my users know that they're on hold for a couple of different reasons. One is, great, Exchange is capturing your email. And we have hold features in SharePoint that Quentin showed yesterday in the eDiscovery session. By the way, how many folks went to the eDiscovery and search session yesterday? OK, cool, a bunch of you. So you guys saw that. That's great. If you haven't, highly recommend checking that out, because a lot of the functionality we have around search-based holds are were also covered there in even more depth than I'm going to show them today. But the feedback that we got is, I need you to let my users know they're on hold. So if they have, say, paper records or other information that isn't covered by some technical hold means, I need you to tell them that so they can keep that information. Or I might just need it to do my due diligence. If there's ever a challenge, say, for a legal matter in a court of law, and I have to let the court of law know that I did my due diligence, I want to be able to show them both, these are the settings I put in place on the server, and I also want to be able to show them that, yes, I informed every one of these users that they need to do the right thing. So I did my due diligence, I did my job there. And this is how you do it. So one piece of information you can put in. The example here just shows, this is the just a quick description of what kind of data needs to be kept on hold so the user knows. I could also put information like, contacts on my legal team. If you have questions about the hold, here's who you talk to. Here are the folks responsible for managing our hold process. If you're not sure what to do or you have questions about it, here's where you go. And I can also put that information at this URL. So if I have an internal legal team webpage that has further information, say, about this specific case, and I call this one stock sale because this example is a stock sale legal matter, then I can direct them to that. Or if I just have a generic page that says, if you're on hold, here's what you do, here's how you contact the legal team, etc. I can go ahead and save that. And both these pieces of information are going to appear in Outlook, and I'll show that to you. But one thing I do want to mention is that you don't have to fill out either of these. Telling the user they're on hold can be really useful if you want to do your due diligence, but there may also be cases where you don't want to do that. Say it's an internal investigation for harassment, or there's some sort of criminal matter that someone's being investigated for and you don't want them to know. You can leave both those boxes blank, nothing shows up in Outlook, and they're none the wiser. And as I'm going to show you in just a minute, the user's really not going to see any different behavior in the client when they're on hold either. There we go. I get a warning that the hold takes about 60 minutes to take effect. And so I turned it on a little over an hour ago for Alex Darrow. I'm going to go ahead to his mailbox, and I'm going to show you what happens when a user's placed on hold. So that hold I put in place covers both the regular primary mailbox and the archive. In this case, I'm just going to give you an example from the archive. And I'm going to take that finance report mail, and I'm going to go ahead and delete that. Alex is on hold, but he's going to delete it. That moves it to his deleted items folder. You can see that's right here. And then he goes ahead and deletes it from that. So now it's out of his view. And for those of you who've worked with Exchange and Outlook for a while, you know there's one other place where he can still potentially get it back. Go to Recover Deleted Items. And he can see, here's that item here, deleted on April 1st at 11:20. And he goes ahead and purges it from there. And as you can tell, from his perspective, nothing is different in this experience. His workflow isn't broken. He can't tell he's on hold. He doesn't have to do anything different. He doesn't get an error saying, you can't get this out of your view, which is really what the user wants in this case. I, as an end user, I know I don't want compliance features interfering with the work I do every day. So make it really simple for me to keep doing exactly what I would do before without getting in my face about it. And that's what happened here. What the user doesn't see under the covers is that this information is all being kept in a hidden folder in the mailbox. And I'll go into a little more detail specifically about how that works. But for now, I'll mention it's a hidden folder that the user doesn't have access to, doesn't count against the user's regular mailbox quota or archive quota, but you as the IT pro or you as the compliance officer can still view this information using our legal search tools. So I'll show you how that works. First thing I'll do is I also want to make sure, before I show you where the item is, I want to show you the in-place hold. The search-based functionality that allows me to put multiple users on hold and use a query associated with it. So I'm going to show you this. This is the in-place eDiscovery and hold console that Quentin showed yesterday. And I'm going to go ahead and create a new hold. This is a separate hold feature. So I'm actually putting this user on two holds in this case. You don't need two holds in this case. I just want to show you that there's two ways to manage it on a per mailbox basis or for groups. Say it like this. And this is going to be a stock sale investigation. And here, I can choose what I want to search in this case. I have one option that says cover all the mailboxes in my organization, or I can be specific about it. So in this case, I could choose, here's a list of mailboxes in my org. I could choose any one of these, or I could choose a team. If I want to choose my finance team, if I want to choose my legal team, I just pick those, and anyone who's in any of these distribution groups is automatically placed on hold. So this is one of the things you can do in bulk to place up to 5,000 users at a time on hold. And the hand went down. Did I answer the question? Sweet. All right. So I do, every time I mention this, get feedback from folks saying, what if I want to do more than 5,000? And I will tell you this, that's feedback we get a lot, and that's one of the things that we are working hard to address. Don't have an exact time frame for it yet, but the ability to put all the mailboxes on hold on vast scale is absolutely something that's higher on our priority list, and we'll have updates on that in the relatively near future. But for now, if you want to put all mailboxes on hold, you can create distribution groups that are up to 5,000 users, or you can just use PowerShell. It's like get mailbox pipe to set mailbox and put everything on hold that way. But for this particular example, I will just put two mailboxes on hold to keep it simple, David and Alex. I'm going to go ahead and hit OK. And I'm going to choose what kind of criteria I want. So for this example, I can choose all the content in the mailbox if I want my hold to be a blanket hold, or I can be more specific. So David had and Alex had a couple of finance-related emails here, so I'm going to put both of those guys on hold. And this is just one simple keyword. If I want to make it more complicated, I can. I can use ands, ors, Boolean logic, parentheses. Proximity searches are also supported. So let's say I want to do windows within two words of the word 8 to capture the phrase Windows 8. I can do that as well. So there's, and I can also scale this to dozens or hundreds of keywords in this case to really make sure that I have a complex query in there if that's really something I need. I can also choose specific dates, start date, end date, if I want to be more targeted as to what data I'm keeping. Also messages from and to, if there are specific users who either sent the mail or the mail is to, I can select those specifically as well. And I can also choose what types of items I keep. We default to all of them, but if you want to pick just email, I can go ahead and do that too. And then I hit next, and this is where I can place that content on hold. I can choose to put the content on hold at my option if I want to, and I can also put it on hold indefinitely, or just a specific period of time. For this particular matter, I'm just going to keep it on hold indefinitely. And I'm going to go ahead and hit finish. And what this is going to do is this is going to run a commandlet behind the covers, or under the covers, that's going to reach out to each of the servers where these mailboxes live and say, these mailboxes are now on hold. Here's the query. Anything that matches these queries, I want you to keep it for the amount of time I just specified for you. And once that's in place, it'll be left there going forward for as long as you want it to be. Now, two common questions that I often get about this are, number one, can I have multiple holds? Yeah. As you can see, there's a list view right here. I can have multiple different holds if I want to. So as an example, I could have one hold with a query that pertains to, say, tax-related information. And I could say, keep that for 5 years. And I could have another hold that has keywords related to, say, finance information. And both of the one for tax, one for finance, each of them cover different sets of information, but I can have them both. I can also apply those to the same set of mailboxes. Let's say I apply both of them to all the mailboxes in my organization. It's okay to have overlapping holds. And what we'll do in the case of hold overlaps, if a given item matches both my tax query and my finance query, we're going to honor both holds. We're going to look at both of them. We're going to pick the longer one to make sure that each one is fully kept for the amount of time that you want it to be kept. And we'll just monitor those items in the background. If the query ever changes or if the time frame ever changes, then we'll reevaluate it for you. Yeah, go ahead. Yes, absolutely. So the question is, can I go over the difference between litigation hold and what this is right here? There's a couple differences, but the main one is that, or there's two. Litigation hold is set on a per mailbox basis, whereas this hold is set, you can set it in bulk on a number of mailboxes. And the second thing is, with litigation hold, it's all the data in the mailbox. This in place hold allows you to set a query. Those are the main differences. And there's a couple other, and I can talk you through some of the nitty-gritty details, but those are the big ones. Yeah, go ahead.
For an example, when you enable the hold on the mailbox here on this,
excuse me,
or e-discovery now, then how do you do that without re-enabling or putting him back again into the?
Mic off so I can cough into it. All right. So your question is, if I want to perform a search, how can I do this without placing the user on hold or taking them off hold, I think is your question.
Yeah, because you did enable it in the call. responsible first on the recipient side, right?
Yep.
And you put him on the legal hold then?
Yes.
The hold. And now I need to come into this window and want to search it again. But I don't see any option that without re-enabling him second time for the legal hold, you can perform a search.
Gotcha. So there is one simple thing you can do, and let me walk you through the rest of my example here, and I'll show you how you can do a search that matches this query. I'll show you that. So as you can see here, hold and discovery are linked so that I can run this query, and it's going to give me search results. So if I do that one search, I'm just going to show you the results, and I'll show you how you can rerun it. Oops, that's not the one I wanted to pick. I wanted to pick preview. So that's going to take a second to run. I will go ahead and answer your question. In this case, anytime I want to get a refresher, let's say I want to run that same query again, I just hit estimate. It's going to rerun that search, and it's going to give me the results that match that query. If I want to use the same query, that's a simple way to do it. If I want to create a brand new query, let's say, and search this person's mailbox without touching the hold, I just create a new search in this list. And in that case, I would create my search. I would put whatever keywords, date ranges I want to get the results that I want. I wouldn't check the hold box. So the result would be I still have my search that's associated with my hold, which is the one right at the top, and I have a separate one that does my search query, and it can be a completely separate query in that case, and it's not going to affect that original hold.
So you have the option of unchecking the hold button there?
You can do that, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Or the case I wanted to cover is, let's say you don't want to uncheck, so the question is, can he uncheck the hold option to turn the hold off? The answer is yes. You can absolutely do that. The other option you have is leave that hold in place, don't touch it, but you click the plus there, create an entirely separate search, like I did, but don't check the hold box for that one. So what that does is that's just a search in that case, and it's totally separate, so I can see the results of that search without altering that original search that's associated with the hold query.
And it would not uncheck the hold option that we did it in the earlier step, right?
Yes, that's correct. It would not change the hold because it's just a separate search, and I can create N searches if I want to, each with different keywords, different mailboxes that I'm searching, etc. Yes.
At the point in time when the search runs, unless you rerun it.
Good question. So is the search a point in time, or is it rerun? And that's a great question. The search is actually rerun on a regular basis. So what that means is once I create the search query, if new items come into that mailbox that match that query, they're going to be automatically captured as well. So it's not just a point in time. If you happen to have new data come in, or let's say someone edits an item, like edits a calendar item, and now it has a keyword that matches that search query, we're going to capture that as well. So it's a forward-looking hold to make sure it satisfies your legal requirements, not just now, but going forward. Yeah, go ahead.
I've worked with the search query for search mailboxes, and I've run across situations where the results are not necessarily accurate. And I've found places where people say that you can only have so many keywords, and it's based on memory and limitations. Can you discuss the limitations of the query?
Sure. Quentin covered this in a little more detail yesterday, so I'm going to have Quentin keep me honest. You can search up to 5,000 mailboxes at a time.
About specifically with the keywords and
yeah.
the query itself.
Yeah. So there are limits as to how long the query can be. Quentin, can you remind me how long is it? 500. Okay. That's what I thought. So yes, there's a limit of 500 keywords on the query. That's how long it can get. Any longer than that, it starts to get to the point where, one, it's pretty hard to enter a 500 keyword query anyway and eyeball it to make sure it's actually what you want. But that's the max that you can do in terms of number of keywords in a query.
And I think no other archiving technology can do that because most of the other third-party archiving products does not go to that extent of 500 words or phrases to that extent.
It is fairly long. I believe that there are some solutions that are a little bit longer. I think the challenge arises, though, the question was, are there other archiving solutions that go beyond 500 keywords? And I think there are some. The challenge, though, is once you get to 500 keywords, especially when you have ands and ors and parentheses, et cetera, it gets really hard for you to look at that query and say, is this actually what I want? So at that point, the limitations of the human mind start to come into play, where it's really just tough to actually craft it the way you need to.
The one other thing that I wanted to ask you, that let's say we put up some mailbox on infinite hold, right, whatever, and then we also want to move the data from his primary mailbox to our archive mailbox periodically, let's say every 6 months or so.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem to work that in that scenario. Should it work? Should it not work?
So the question is, if I have a user's mailbox on hold, can I still move data from the primary mailbox to the archive while it's on hold? And the answer is, if you want to do that, the answer is absolutely yes. So you have that capability to say, I need this data on hold. I need you to preserve it so it can't get deleted. But if you want to move it from that primary mailbox to the archive, just to make sure that the primary mailbox doesn't bloat and get really big, you still can move that to the archive. So per your comment mentioning it didn't work, I'd be happy to chat with you about that, but that's how it's supposed to work.
User can always do that. What I'm saying here is if you set a retention category, retention policies, and say, hey, you know what, this inbox, this is my retention tag, and any message is sitting in this inbox over 60 days, you move this mail to the archived mailbox. That's what we use retention policy, right?
Yep.
That's not happening.
Gotcha. So that'd be, so the question is, or I think what you're mentioning is you're seeing, if you put a mailbox on home, you're not seeing data actually be moved to the archive, even though you have a policy that does that. And it's supposed to. So
we're working on it.
Yeah, that's something that we're working on right now.
All right.
Yeah, so that is absolutely something that we've heard before. And so, yeah, that's something that should be working relatively shortly. Yep. All right. I'll take one more question before I go on. Go ahead.
I'm not making a mistake here, right?
Nope. You're good. Go ahead.
If you create a new in-place hold and specify the hold checkbox but don't specify a query, does that have the effect of placing the entire mailbox on hold?
It does, actually. And let me show you real quick the option we had there. There's a slightly better way to do it. And so the question was, if I don't choose a query, will that keep all the data on hold? Under the covers, it will. But the easier way to do it is you choose this radio button right here that just says include all mailbox content. What that actually does under the covers is exactly what you described. We just grab all the data without running a query, but it's a little more straightforward way to just be really clear as to what you want.
And the only output of this discovery is to put into a PST file. There's no way that you can put it back into the user's mailbox directly.
Gotcha. So the question is, what is the output of discovery? And there's a couple options you have here. One is you can just have the data be displayed with directly from the user's mailbox so I can just see it. So it never takes it out of the mailbox in the first place. And that's really where we want to go. We don't want to make you pull data out of mailboxes just to take a look at it. But the other options are you can copy to another mailbox, or you can put it into a PST if you want to. Now, I heard your question about can you put it back into the user's mailbox? I don't quite understand what it is you want to do there.
Yes, exactly, because some of the customers are doing it for that purpose and say that we need to keep everything in there, and in case we need to restore me email back to the user's mailbox. So now the only option at this point is to export it into a PST and then probably import it back into the user's mailbox. There should be a provision, in my view, that you put either the whole set of data or subset of data that you get out of this discovery, we should be able to put it back into the user's mailbox if that's the requirement. And I think that requirement is not being met right now.
Interesting. So let's chat about that a little bit after. That's not a requirement that I've heard before to actually do a search and then put data back in the mailbox in quite that way. So I'd like to talk a little bit about it more and understand your requirements. Yeah. Okay. One more.
You can put it into a mailbox, but it's a discovery mailbox.
You can put it into a mailbox. It is a discovery mailbox in the UI. Right. If you wanted to script it, that requirement actually isn't there. So if you want to do a copy at the command or what's called a copy search using this exact tool, the exact command line that it runs under the covers, you do have that option using the command line to say, I want to copy this data to any mailbox I want to. So if you wanted to do exactly what you mentioned, I think that would meet your requirement, but I want to talk to you about it a little bit more to make
That's
sure I fully understand
mailbox.
It.
Can it go back into the user's mailbox? That's my question. I don't know if it can.
Yeah, can we move on? Okay, got it. Yeah, let me take one more in the back and we'll keep going. Go ahead. Got it, sure. All right. So I showed that. One other thing I want to mention is I want to show you where this data lives. So really quickly, as you saw, I took that item, I deleted it from Alex's mailbox in this case, but it's still there. Not viewable by him, but it is accessible by other folks. Can see that, same items right there. This is from that hidden folder in his mailbox. You as the IT pro can see it, you as the compliance officer can see it, but no one else can. So that's the end of it for that. And there we go. Awesome. I want to give you a quick walkthrough of what actually happened under the covers here, because I get a lot of questions about this. The first thing that happens in the life cycle of an email is item was received, ended up being placed in the inbox in this case. User then deleted it, moved it to the deleted items folder, and then once that was done, it was actually deleted again, moved into this location called recoverable items, also affectionately called the dumpster. This is a place where it sits in the mailbox. It's a hidden folder. The users can't see it, with the exception of that deletions folder right there. And it doesn't count against the primary mailbox, the archive mailbox quota. Completely separate in that case. This deletions folder, when you saw me hit the recover deleted items button in Outlook, the list that you saw came from this folder. That's where this content lives. You also saw that I deleted the item from that folder, and it's put in a folder called purges. This is that hidden folder in the mailbox. When I did the search and showed it, this is where that came from. This is not viewable by the end user. It's only viewable by you as either the IT pro or the compliance person. And so if a mailbox is on litigation hold, this is where that data is going to end up. If the user is on in-place hold, the search-based hold, we're going to do the same type of operation. We just put it in a different folder, one called discovery hold. We have two separate folders because the one folder for litigation hold, we don't run the queries against. The second one, we do run the queries. So for both of those, we're going to keep that data in place, and we're going to continuously evaluate that to see if the query has changed or if the item has gone past whatever hold time limit you gave, and if so, we'll get rid of it. And I'll walk through that process. There's also the scenario where I have an item in my mailbox, and it gets edited. Let's say I change a calendar item, or I change a task, or I edit an email. Many folks don't actually know this, but if you double-click a message in Outlook, there's an option that lets you edit it. You can change the subject, you can change the body in your own mailbox. Some people do that to just put notes in emails and things like that. So in that case, we want to make sure that those changes are captured as well. So what we do is, if something is edited, we'll do an operation that we call copy on write. We'll make a copy of that item. We'll place it in a hidden folder called versions, and that copy is made just before the edit happens. So the result is the copy or the item just before it was edited ends up in that hidden folder. The edited copy is still in the mailbox where the end user can see it, because that's what they want. They want their edited copy. And we have both of those that we maintain. And that's useful because from the IT pro or the compliance perspective, you now get a snapshot of what that item was at any given point in time. And if there are any cases where someone edited or changed something, you can see, okay, what edit did they make, when did they make it, if that's information that you need to maintain. This shows you how the items get to these hidden folders where we keep them in the mailbox. The next thing that happens is we just periodically, on either a daily or weekly basis, we'll reevaluate that search, see if anything doesn't match the query. Say I edited the item, or I changed the query so that it no longer applies, or an item has gone past its hold period. And once that happens, we'll delete it from either the deletions versions or purges folders if it's on litigation hold, or if it's an item on discovery hold, then we will go ahead and remove it from there. But that illustrates the full life cycle of the email that you can control with those hold policies. Whoops. Yes. Sorry, I moved my slides. Good question. So it sounds like you're asking, what happens in the archive when this happens? And yes, it's exactly the same. The archive is just another mailbox, so I will have a versions folder in my archive. So if I edit something from there, it'll be kept in a folder with the same name in the archive as well. And when I do a search, it will automatically pull up both the primary mailbox and the archive if I want to see both of them.
Does that include edits to the attachments?
Yes, it does. Any edit you make to the item will be covered, except for changing red on red status, I believe, because that would generate a whole lot of extra copies for you. But everything else we keep. All right. One thing I want to mention really quickly, the screenshot on the left shows the Exchange Admin Center search that I just showed you. The one on the right, which Quentin showed yesterday, I'm not going to go into today, covers what you can actually do if you have SharePoint and Exchange deployed in your environment. How many folks have SharePoint deployed, at least somewhere in their environment? Okay, a whole lot of you. If you ever have a need to perform a search and place a hold across email and documents, the SharePoint eDiscovery Center will let you do that. That's a new feature in Wave 2013. Lets you search both, and you can see in the screenshot right there in the middle, the source type is both mailbox and SharePoint site, so you can search and place holds on both. If you have questions about that, I'll refer you to Quentin's session, but just want to let you guys know it's there. Yeah, go ahead. On the SharePoint side, I don't believe there is today.
Can they do it? PowerShell.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's not PowerShell. Yes. Thank you. So yeah, Quentin's my SharePoint expert. Yes, using CSOM, the PowerShell object model, you can absolutely do the same thing. It's just not PowerShell commandless directly. But if you want to do a scripted interface and searches in SharePoint, you can do it.
Okay.
Alrighty. So one other thing I want to mention, the last thing concerning hold, is something new that we're building that you're going to see light up in the next couple of months. One common piece of feedback I get that's really important is folks say, when I do a search, I need to know what information I need to know exactly who got a given email. That's really important. And that is something that we've captured for a long time if the person's name is on the 2CC BCC line. We didn't have it if it's a distribution group. We would have the name of the distribution group, and I can look up who's in that distribution group today, but when that message was sent, say, 5 years ago, I don't know who was on that. And so what a lot of folks do is they'll use a feature called journaling in Exchange that will create a separate copy of all my data, put it in a separate mailbox or a third-party archive product, and it will actually expand out that distribution group and keep all that information. And that's something that we don't want to be a requirement anymore. So that's some functionality that we actually have being tested right now. It's going to ship in the next few months. So we're going to capture all the original recipients, regardless of whether they're directly on the 2CC BCC line or in a distribution group. So if you're journaling data just for that, that won't be a requirement anymore. Ready? Going to jump right to hold. This is the last topic that I have that I want to cover today. And the idea behind delete policy, or messaging records management, is this shows the closure of the lifecycle of an item. This lets you get rid of data that you no longer need to keep, either for the for business needs or for your information workers' day-to-day work needs. And one quick concept I want to cover with you is what actions you can take, specifically in the context of what's called a retention tag. A retention tag is effectively a label that you can put on a mailbox, a folder within a mailbox, or an item within a mailbox that says, I want you to take this action on this mailbox folder item. And the types of actions you have are the ones listed right here. You can either delete it after a certain period of time, move it to my archive after a certain period of time, or just do nothing in that case. And you can do that at three different levels. And I'll show you a demo of this in just a minute, but want to make sure you guys get the concept. I can have a policy on my entire mailbox with what's called a default policy tag. So one example is move everything to my archive from my regular mailbox after 2 years. I can set a policy that does that. It's IT enforced. The user can't grant exceptions to it if you don't want them to. It's going to automatically move all that data. Provides a nice cleanup process to allow that data to be automatically moved to the archive when it's older. After a couple years, most folks will not need it anymore, even though they can still see it in the archive if they need to, but really saves me as the information worker from spending a lot of time doing that cleanup. If I want to be a little more specific, I can also have delete policies. So I'll just give you one example here. Let's say I had a default policy tag that said, move everything from my primary mailbox to my archive after 2 years and delete it after 3 years. That's one way to one example that will let you control the life cycle of your data. Now, if you want to be a bit more specific with this, you can also set up a policy that is specific to a certain folder, say my deleted items folders. And this is what a retention policy tag does. This will let me say, in addition to deleting or moving data to my archive after 2 years, deleting it after three, I also want you to delete stuff from the deleted items folder after 30 days. Because the user's already indicated they don't need it anymore, just go ahead and clean that up for them. Save the user the time of emptying their own deleted items folder so they just don't need to do it. This is also IT enforced. If you as the IT pro or the compliance officer sets this on a folder, then there's no way for the information worker to undo that or change it if you don't want to. Now, if you do want to empower your information worker to give you some feedback on that, then I'll get to your question in just 1 second. Then you have that ability to let them give that feedback. And this is what's called a personal tag. So you can create a tag in addition to the ones I mentioned that says, keep this item for 5 years, or never delete this. And what will happen is that tag will show up in the user's view and outlook. They can apply it to a folder. They can apply it to an item. And once they apply that, in my example, keep this for 5 year tag and then delete it, then it'll automatically be applied to that folder that the user chooses. And this is nice for a couple of reasons. One, it's useful if you want to let your information workers grant an exception to a policy. If I have my default policy that deletes data after 3 years, but someone on my legal team says, I know I need to keep this for longer, indefinitely, 5 years, 10 years, whatever options you give them, they can make that exception to the folder or the item. And I don't expect information workers to tag everything. That would take way too much time. But for those rare cases where, say, 3 years in this example isn't enough, then they can choose that option to say, yep, for this particular example or this particular item or this folder, I want to have that exception granted. Another thing I can do with these, and this is something that I do myself, is you can have really short retention tags that allow your end users to direct how the delete process cleans up data from the mailbox. Me, for example, I'm on a few distribution groups, and one is interesting news related to Microsoft. I have a 30-day delete tag in my mailbox. I have a rule move all the items sent to that distribution group to a folder, and I put the 30-day delete tag on it. Because for me, if it's news and I don't read it after 30 days, I'm not going to. So that one-time operation lets me tell Exchange, yeah, I want you to clean up this folder for me forever. Just go do it. And then it's going to do that for me going forward, so I really don't have to do it again. Yeah, one question in the back. It,
I guess I kind of have a challenge with that whole users moving their data back into the inbox as a solution to offline capability from there, which the archive is provides one of the solutions to the holy grail of getting rid of PSTs, but you always get users who say, well, I can't get to that data offline, and so if archive was available offline, then we have a much better challenge. So it's kind of a two-part question, but it goes back to the original point of not being able to get archive offline.
Gotcha. So per your first question of what happens if the user moves data back to the archive if I have a move to archive policy, you can absolutely configure your move to archive policy such that they don't apply to my whole mailbox. So I can say my move to archive policy may apply to just certain folders, inbox sent items, so that if the user moves data back to one of those folders that doesn't have an archive policy, it's not going to get moved immediately back to the archive. So there is the possibility to do that. Per your question, though, can I make the archive available offline? That isn't something that we offer today. And that's absolutely something that we've heard requests for. Usually when I talk to folks and they say, do you really want all that data archived, all that data available offline? Most folks tell me, well, no, I really don't, but that's absolutely something that we hear and it's something we're considering. So thank you for your feedback. That's something we've heard before. Gotcha. Yeah. And that's absolutely something that we're looking at. And so that's a piece of feedback we got before. So thank you. I will please come up after. Anybody who has specific feedback, and I say that's great feedback, please do come up. I like to make sure I write down your name, email address, and other things as well so I can get some useful information for you. Yeah, all right. I'll take one more before I go on.
We want to put a policy on the inbox. Two questions. Is that common, and is there a way to keep inheritance from working on the folders of the inbox?
Okay. So the question what the you mentioned you wanted to put a policy on your inbox. Can you make that not work on subfolders? Yes, there is an option via PowerShell that lets you say just the inbox but not all the subfolders. For your second question of is that common, I don't understand. Could you elaborate on that?
It's common that people are putting a retention on the inbox. We're trying to force people to move things out of the inbox that they want to keep. Anything that stays in the inbox goes away.
I have heard all kinds of interesting things in terms of the way people use it. And I've definitely heard people do exactly what you mentioned. They said, I want to have, say, a default policy. Some folks have said, I want to put a short policy on my inbox that deletes stuff, but have them move to other folders if they want to keep it longer. And I've seen other people do it the other way, where they say, longer policy on my inbox, but once I put it in deleted items, make it real short. So the flexibility is there for those things that you wanted to do. It just depends on what makes the most sense for your business environment. Yep. All right, let me jump into my demo real quick. I want to make sure I cover that in the last about 12 minutes I have. So I'm going back to my Exchange Admin Center, and I want to quickly show you my retention tags. There are a few retention tags that are available out of the box, and I'll just point out a couple of these. You heard me mention this default two-year move to archive policy. This is created out of the box, and once you provision an archive for somebody, it's automatically given to them to move that old data to it. You can turn it off if you want, but it's there by default. We also, and this is one I created, deleting data by default after 2 years, helping me complete that life cycle after I move it to the archive. And these are tags that apply to my whole mailbox. And these are some personal tags that are also there out of the box. You can make new ones if you want. The idea here is that if a user takes this tag, applies it to a folder or an item, it'll be kept for a longer period of time. And I'll show you in Outlook how that works. But before I get there, I do want to talk a little bit about how you distribute these policies, or these tags, excuse me. And it's well known, and I get a lot of feedback, that not everybody in the organization necessarily deals with their mail in the same way. My executives may work with email differently than my brokers, who may work with it differently than my legal team, who may work with it differently than my finance team. So if you have a situation where you want to give different email policies to different members of your organization, you can do it. And the way you do that is with a policy. And I'll show you one here. I create this policy, which is effectively just a grouping mechanism for these tags. And in this case, you see it has the move to archive after 2 years, delete after 3 years. And in this example, I apply that to my finance team. They have a really simple, straightforward policy. this happens to all their data, and there's nothing available to them to override it because I didn't give them that choice. My legal team, however, in this example, things are a little more complex for them. They also have that default policy that moves it to the archive and deletes after 3 years, but I also want to give them the ability to override that. They have legal cases that may go past the three-year limit. They may have key legal information for some process that's going on that they need to keep for longer, so I want to let them override that. So I've given the option to keep it for 5 years or never delete it, and I'll show you how that works. In this case, let me show you how to actually apply it to somebody. I'm going to go to my same user, David. I'm going to go to Mailbox Features. And I'm going to set the retention policy here. He has the default policy. This is that two-year move to archive policy. And I'm just going to choose legal team policy for him. I'm going to hit save. And that's going to start enforcing that policy on that mailbox and make those tags available to him in Outlook. This takes a couple minutes as well, so I've already set that for Alex Darrow's mailbox, and I'm going to show that one to you. Right here, let's say he goes to his archive in this case. These tags and these policies apply both to the primary mailbox and archive, if you want them to. And I'm going to show you this particular item here. Now, the first thing you'll notice is that this item listed here has the default three-year delete policy, which is the one I just showed you a minute ago. In this case, it's going to be deleted after 3 years or moved to the archive, if it wasn't already in the archive, after two. And that policy will apply by default. For the vast majority of Alex's mail, he says, moving to the archive after 2 years and deleting after three, that's fine for me. I hardly ever look at mail after 3 years. There's very little I have to take on a day-to-day basis. But for this particular item, let's say tax rate history information is really important to him, he can override that. So he can right-click on the item. He can go ahead, and he can choose a different policy or different tag for that folder. And once he does it, it'll change what the retention policy is. It'll also change the date at which it expires, so he has an understanding of what that tag is going to do now that item's going to be kept. Now, this is useful for folks who like to tag individual items, but some folks are real fans of folders, and we wanted to make sure we cater to them as well. So if Alex, in this case, always puts data in his finance reports folder, he could go set a policy on it and says, everything I put in this folder, I want you to keep it for 5 years. And there's a note that it will take up to a day to update all those items. But it's going to go ahead and take that. Now, any item that's in that folder now, or any item he puts into that folder going forward, automatically inherits this policy. So if David is already a filer, he already likes folders, he doesn't have to do anything different going forward. He's already indicated to Exchange that everything that I put in this folder is something I want to keep for 5 years. Now, if he drags new stuff in there, which he was doing before because he already drags and drops, it just works. There's nothing different that he has to do. One final thing I want to mention here is that I called out how you can have tags in this example to my legal team or my finance team. And many of your organizations probably have established teams where you say, finance team does this, legal team does that, etc. But there's also lots of ad hoc groups that exist in many different enterprises, and we understand that. So it's going to be a pretty difficult task in some cases to make sure everybody always has the right tags available to them all the time, assuming you don't want to give everybody the same ones. So what we do in that case is, refresh my screen here. I'm going to go to Outlook Web App for Alex, and I'm going to show you what he can do if he actually wants to. Oh, cool. I'll give it my phone number. Didn't ask me for that before. But what he can do is he can actually go to a user experience in Outlook, or an Outlook web app in this case, that will let him choose additional tags if he needs them. Just a quick point out that showing an Outlook web app, you can also set these tags as well here. And if he wants additional tags he didn't have before, he can choose those too. So he goes to organize email, and he chooses retention policies. Let's say, and these are the tags that are available to him, you saw those deployed. Let's say that Alex volunteered as part of his company's charitable giving campaign this year. Different group of people volunteer for that every year, so it's not always the same folks. It's going to be really difficult to figure out from the IT side who's on this group right now, who isn't anymore. You just want to let your users self-service that kind of thing if this is a requirement in your environment. What he'll do is he'll go, and this is Alex, the end user, against his own mailbox, and he'll choose this charitable giving campaign tag, and he'll hit save, and he'll add that. And in a few minutes, that's going to show up. So when he right-clicks on items now in Outlook or folders, he now has that additional option to him. So he has just made that decision on his own to choose what tags he needs so he can make sure that he gets what he needs. And what this does is, if you have a lot of tags in your environment, if you have a somewhat complex retention schedule, this saves you from giving everybody in your organization 50, 100 tags by default or however many you have, and letting them take a smaller default set and then pick the ones that they need. These are a few workflow slides. They already covered. These were just here for filler in case my demo didn't work, which it did. Yep. And a quick recap. That's really everything that I wanted to cover today. I want to save the last few minutes for questions, but just a quick recap of what we did. Just talk through how we allow you to scale to keep the email you need for business and legal reasons, and allow you to control the lifecycle of it. Hold to keep what you need to keep, delete to get rid of what you don't need, and any questions you have, come on up. I'll be here. Yeah, come on.